Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
The pigeon's gone.
Oh no.
There was a pigeon right here a moment ago that was having a great time. It was snacking on everything around us here just by Bordeaux train station.
He finished the leftovers of my pan au chocolat.
Yeah, he loved it as well.
I accidentally ordered two of.
Nice.
I thought I'd ordered one, and then I was very confused that I was charged €8.45.
I'd be very confused as charging pounds.
Yeah, and then it turned out I bought two by accident.
But
that shows how well my French is going. But it's all right, I served the pigeon as well.
Yeah. So we're currently just outside the Bordeaux train station.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of Irish fans with suitcases leaving.
Yeah.
Just like there will be on the quarterfinal weekend. And there are a lot of Welsh fans with suitcases arriving, just like there'll be on the semi-final weekend.
Ooh.
That is some hashtag banter and not a prediction.
No,
I want to make it
because
clear.
We do have to play Fiji first. But.
Yeah, which is just a thing of abject terror, I think,
yep.
At the minute, as a Welsh fan. We're recording this on the Sunday morning before that game takes place.
Yeah.
We did record one of these right after the opening game on Friday night at the Stade de France, whilst the music was playing in the background and fans were leaving, and it was incredibly loud, and you couldn't make out a word we said.
6 years, 6 months preparing a certain team to play a
Yeah. It was really unfortunate because we provided a lot of really good takes.
It was the best insight anyone provided on that game, I think.
It really was. And Jerome Kano and Stephen Donald walked past
yeah.
us while we were recording.
And two drunk French guys came and just joined in with us.
Yeah, and said, Pays de Galles is good.
Yeah. And I said, we see them in the final. And they were like, no, the final's impossible. Final's Fiji v Georgia.
Yeah. Which was good.
Yeah.
Which was good.
That's
didn't
a cool
like
game, mate.
The suggestion of Chile making the final.
No.
Hey,
they were a bit confused. They thought I was being serious, I think.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, it's just different cultures of
yeah.
Of sarcasm, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll just very quickly talk about that game, because I think the video is already underway. I'm most likely writing it.
Yeah.
It's going all right. France, very, very good.
Yes.
New Zealand, all right, but flawed as heck.
Yeah, definitely.
I think New Zealand will get better. But I also think we saw a higher percentage of what New Zealand can do than what we saw of what France can do.
Yes.
France still have Jonathan Danti to come back in. They still have
Cyril Bai
to come back in. They still have
Paul Vlemsa to come back in.
Potentially. Maybe Vlemsa. And they have also a chance to get over the nerves.
Mm.
Because you saw that opening play. Moafana makes a very panicked read.
Yeah.
Leads to that opening try for Mark Talaya. And a lot of that, like, you can pull analysis and you can the move's really smart by the All Blacks and that's what I focus on the video. But, like, ultimately, I think a lot of that comes down to Moafana as a young kid being nervous.
Sure, sure. But I don't think he's going to do that twice.
No,
I think
exactly.
You know, they've got that out of their system. And granted, they scored two tries, but that in the first half, let's say, that was the only time France defensively looked, like, weak, like they were
yeah.
going to concede a try. And obviously, they conceded another one early in the second half. But you say New Zealand are going to get better. France are definitely going to get better.
Yeah.
That first half of France was, we said this on Friday, but probably the weakest half of rugby they've played in about 2 years.
Yeah.
And they went in 1 point up
they
against the
All Blacks. They still came ahead, yeah.
Yeah. Like, and then went on to win. And
the big point we kept making was that New Zealand had enough chances to score four tries, five
yeah.
tries, and they scored two.
Yeah.
And that is unlike New Zealand teams of past. But also, it shows what a fearsome prospect France are
yeah.
if they're able to deny them and push them back to that.
Yeah, and we were saying to each other after the game that we thought if France were going to win, it would be like 2021, where
yeah.
they ripped them apart, and obviously there's no one to Max, so that does change things. But instead of it being either that or like a last-minute penalty to win it, it was just a gradual demolition of the
just
All Blacks.
A grinding down of them
yeah,
until they weren't
so
anything
rare.
Anymore. Yeah, when have you ever seen that?
Yeah.
Like, South Africa the other week smashed them. That happens occasionally where a team just has, like, a destiny day.
Yeah.
You know, Ireland's done it a few times.
It's not like the All Blacks were rubbish.
No, those Ireland tour matches were the only time we've ever really seen it last
yeah.
year.
Yeah.
And then France did it to them this week, and that's very possible.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing for this, right, is you look at the All Blacks draw, and I think the All Blacks, like 2019, the All Blacks were not the best team in that competition.
No.
But they had in them, and you knew this the entire time, at least one game where they could beat literally anyone in the world by 30 points.
Yeah.
And they pulled that against Ireland, and that Ireland team was really good, really strong, had beaten them the year beforehand, you know, and has beaten them a number of times since. But on that day, the All Blacks were 30 points better than them. You know, did they hit 50? It was 40 at least.
42.
Yeah.
I want to say.
But it was just comprehensive and embarrassing for Ireland.
Yeah.
And I think the All Blacks have it in them to do that to literally any team in this competition.
Mm.
I also think, looking at this, either they will click completely over the course of this pool stage and things will flood from there, or they'll pull that performance once, and that could just be...
Is this Fijians in town, maybe?
Chanting Wales.
Oh, Wales. Oh, is it Wales?
Yeah.
I just heard loud singing and just thought... It was too tuneful to be Welsh.
But yeah, or I think New Zealand will potentially pull one game where they destroy South Africa, Ireland, Scotland in the quarterfinal.
Sure, sure.
I think that's very possible.
As you say, they have that in them. Whether that will happen or not is a completely different thing, because... you would have thought that they could have done that on Friday.
But, like, that's it. You look to New Zealand, you're like, that is not a World Cup winning team.
No.
That is a team who are so easily able to be taken apart, just pulled, like, bit from bit.
There was a point in that game where you turned to me and said, we are living in the last minute of New Zealand having not lost a pool game.
Yeah.
At the 79th minute of that game, which is mad that that's not happened. It's just one of the great things about the World Cup.
Yeah.
It's just, like, when new shit happens, when history is made.
Yeah.
And I love that.
It was amazing. It was an amazing thing to be there for. The opening ceremony as well was a hell of a thing.
Yeah.
John Dujardin flying through the air. I think it was far more spectacular in person than it was on the TV.
Sure.
I haven't watched it back yet, though. I have downloaded it onto the laptop, so that was sitting there. I could have watched that on the train over.
Yeah.
I didn't.
And also, Bill Beaumont coming out and getting booed, as well as Macron.
Which, like, was a hell of a moment. Like,
yeah.
That was a big moment of World Cup social
politics.
You could
not hear a word Beaumont said. Macron's a little bit more well-practiced at talking
exactly.
over people
he's
booing.
A professional politician. He can do that. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
But
it was a it
Beaumont
was very
looked
funny
shaken by
when,
it.
Yeah, when Beaumont tried to stop the crowd from chanting Allez les Bleus. It was like, calm down, gentlemen. And everyone just got louder at that point, because we didn't want to hear him talk about rugby values when he said, oh, 200 years ago I made my debut for England and started playing this beautiful game of rugby. Shut up.
Speaking of Webb Ellis, there's a very interesting piece out there by Tony Collins that was published today on the myth of William Webb Ellis and how actually classist it is, and how it was largely spread as a means of, like, belittling people wanting to break off a former rugby league.
Well, at some point while we're out here, we're going to go and visit the Webb Ellis grave.
And I want to do something on that and on the myth of Webb Ellis.
Yeah.
Because it is a baffling thing. And yet we're all playing for the Webb Ellis trophy this year.
It's hilarious.
So, yeah, I think France, the more and more you look at that game, the more and more you went, oh, they're winning the World Cup.
Yeah.
Like, it felt like destiny, all of that. And it's going to take a hell of a team to beat them, but also a team that can really overcome what feels like a nation just giving themselves over to it. Like, we've had, since we recorded that, the viewing figures in, and more people watched than any of France's games when they won the Football World Cup,
which is
a few years ago, bar the semi and final.
That's mental.
So it's already growing to a point at which we could have.
You know, we've been in France. You've been in France for a couple of weeks. I've been here for a few days now, and it's massive. It's absolutely everywhere. Antoine Dupont's face is everywhere. He is such a star in it, and we've, you know, just arrived in Bordeaux. It's not just in Paris. First thing we saw when we left Bordeaux train station was Antoine Dupont's face.
Yeah,
it's mad. Just the rugby fever. And everyone, so many people in French shirts.
Yeah,
and it's not just like at the game we couldn't move for them. You know.
Yeah, and it's funny. It came on pretty much entirely the day of the World Cup starting.
Mm.
I was noticing, because I was in Japan for 10 days before the competition started as well, and that grew slowly over the course of those 10 days. That you saw more and more rugby stuff. Until the day before, it was huge, and the day of, it was enormous.
Yeah,
it happened overnight. It was like everyone had arrived and just worn normal clothes.
Yeah,
and then they pulled on their French shirts, and now the fevers began. And hopefully, it keeps up for the entire tournament. And France doing well would really, really help with that.
Yeah, it's impossible not to get caught up in the hype for both Antoine Dupont and France. I challenge anybody to resist the hype, because it's so much more fun if you don't.
I wouldn't wish that on anyone.
Yeah.
Please give yourself over to the hype at all times. So, speaking of hype, we should talk about Namibia.
I was going to say, that is my other point of hype. Namibia-Italy yesterday, really, really good game. That was such a... I think there's a real special place in my heart, and yours as well, for the second game of the World Cup.
Yes.
Because the first one's always a big occasion and so on. And the second one's where it feels like it's begun. And you've got certainly this time around, the introduction of tier two teams and teams who just never play each other.
Yeah.
Like France, Namibia and Italy, it's such an unlikely combination.
They played each other in 2019, and I think since then, I think they hadn't played, what, since 91?
Yeah.
Because Namibia's third and fourth games ever were against Italy.
Like, the fact that you can look at a team sheet and see, you know, Ange Capozzo against JC Crayling, you know, as like as a matchup, and you can talk about that. I just love that about the World Cup. And Namibia didn't disappoint with only what, their ninth game in 4 years?
Yeah, which is they played an extra friendly against the Blue Bulls right before coming out as well.
Right.
So they've got an extra uncapped game under their belt. Sadly without Chad Plato, the greatest rugby player in the world.
Yeah.
But it was they were just fantastic. They were great to watch. And the scoreline eventually got away from them enormously.
Oh. Italy were great by the end.
Yeah.
I thought Paolo Gobisi played really well. I think he called the attack really nicely for Italy, even when they weren't scoring tries. I think they were playing like we saw them playing the Six Nations, you know, that they could play those wide shapes. Yeah, I think that by the time they got going, it was kind of inevitable that it was going to happen eventually, don't get me wrong. But, yeah, Namibia managed to delay that for so long. It was fantastic. And credit to, firstly, their back row. Let's talk about Vian Conradi, your boy from the New England Free Jacks. He was one of the players of yesterday for me.
I think over the course of what we've seen so far, obviously all the France are fantastic. Aldrit was exceptional. I think there's a few players in that French team you can pull out, right? Other than France and maybe Beauden Barrett.
And George Ford.
No, I was going to say, no, I think the two standout players from what we saw on Saturday were George Ford and Vian Conradi.
Yeah, he was so, so good. I think Richard Hardwick was brilliant as well, because I think that always could have gone one of two ways with him having played for the Wallabies, now declared for Namibia. I think there is always a little bit of an expectation of like, oh, has this guy fell off? But
yeah.
He's great. He can carry so well. He was excellent at the breakdown. And just clearly just a genuine, like, experienced leader.
He's just one of these players, and I said this to you yesterday, that makes 1 metre more than you expect him to on every carry.
Because he's not physically that imposing.
No.
But he's a really, really strong player.
But I just thought Conradi was absolutely everywhere. I thought his impact on every involvement of the game, he's such a kind of like hard-nosed battler, grafter.
Yeah.
You know, like, he is a player who you can tell has come from the shit places all the way.
Yeah.
And it's just like, no, his determination is just kind of superpower.
Yeah.
That's got him through this. And he just has, he's one of two players, I think, yesterday on Saturday, that really put their name up to be in contention to win a big contract in Europe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I would be amazed if a French or English team doesn't sign Conradi.
Yeah.
And I love him at New England Free Jacks. He was forward of the season in MLR, and he was such a huge part. You know, I think his player of the match in the final. No, he was up there with Jason Petros, who was obviously a hero.
Yeah.
Had a great season with Taranaki in 2017 and really backed it up with New England Free Jacks. But yeah, Conradi, I thought, was just like exceptional. Just like everything you could possibly want for a tier two back rower.
He can play against somebody like Sebastian Negri, who is a better player than him, and match him on the pitch just because of how hard he works, and he was fantastic. Let's quickly also talk about Tian Swanepoel.
We have to.
Because he was the star of the match in many ways. I think so many people who either haven't seen him play before or seen very little of him. I can't say I've seen massive amounts of him before this, but like at club level and stuff. I saw Rian Lowe tweeting saying all of these fake fans of Tian Swanepoel are coming out. But he was just so good. Like, it was the best impression of Tian's Kotso against Fiji in 2011 that you could possibly ask for without scoring three drop goals.
That's it, which George Ford took on later. Like, they split the Kotso of it all between them. No, I thought he was absolutely brilliant. The fact that he can kick goals from Spain is a huge bonus. Like, he can just pop home, you know, and just, like, if he picks up an injury, he can just kick them from the hospital bed. You know, like, whatever he's doing, wherever he is in the world, he can knock over drop goals.
I love that he went for that 60-metre penalty. I know he obviously sprayed it, but it was just great that he went for it.
It was huge, huge fun.
Also, one thing that was hilarious was every single kickoff, he just landed on the 5 metre line.
Yeah.
Like, effortlessly, because that is the minimum distance he can kick a ball. He cannot physically land it on the 10. Like,
he was sent, but like, it's such a smart thing, because it is tying it into that tactic we saw a lot on the 1987 podcast, for anyone that has listened back to the old episodes on the World Cups. But teams just constantly kicked it dead, because then they would just do a dropout and you get the ball back from an advanced position. And so it was all anyone did. And now, actually, Swanepoel's sending it between the posts 5 metres out, because he's got a massive boot and is incredibly deadly accurate with it.
Yeah.
It was actually a really interesting, really useful tactic.
Yeah.
I think he was great in terms of what he did with the attack.
Yeah.
The shape he put on it, the way he was able to just like...
Oh, his ball for Mouton's try is unbelievable.
Yes. And Mouton's try in general...
One of my favourite tries of that game.
Yeah. And I hope we get a chance to go through it in video form.
Yeah. We'll figure that out.
Still working all this out. France New Zealand is definitely happening. The others, we'll see. But the accuracy with which Namibia work that is sublime.
Yeah.
Like that is,
one man clear outs over the breakdowns and just all the forwards working into position so
quickly.
And
it happens while the game's still on. That puts them back within seven.
Yeah.
It's an absolutely enormous score, but it's well worked. That's not like the other tier two tries we saw yesterday where, you know, Georgia getting a drive over, looking at, you know, Romania getting one against a run of play from, not against a run of play because it was right at the start of the game, but, you know, like ultimately looks as such, a kind of breakaway with Hinkley Vavasa. However, that Namibia try was just well constructed. They got into 22, they worked the phases, they were doing these one-man clear-outs.
As well, like it's clearly all planned.
They were doing one-man clear-outs, they knew what they were doing in attack, they knew how to stress a defence. Swanepoel managing it really well, Demian Stevens as well.
Yeah.
At nine. And then, yeah, Swanepoel throws a hell of a ball over Mouton.
Yeah.
Who finishes brilliantly in the corner.
Yeah. It's, as I say, one of my favourite tries. I think, I mean, obviously, Andrew Capozzo's try is worth talking about.
Sure.
Where he does the 1-2 with Monte Ioane. Capozzo very quiet yesterday, but...
But he does this. Like, Capozzo will go missing for games at a time.
Yeah.
You just kind of won't see him. Or he'll have a game where he just kind of drops a high ball or two.
Sure.
And I think, like, that's something that gets missed a lot, is the downsides that he has sometimes. And also, he was stuck on the wing in a team, you know, that wasn't necessarily happening.
Yeah.
Lorenzo Cannone was fantastic. We had two non-break man of the matches in a row.
Absolutely.
And I don't have an enormous amount of depth about Italy, because they sort of just did the thing they did.
Yeah.
Against an opposition that's
softened. They didn't show the whole hand. Italy, no. I think it's safe to say, but they did play expansively, as we saw from the Six Nations.
Identical to their warm-up game against Romania.
Yeah, yeah. I think Odogwu's try at the end kind of summed it all up.
Yeah,
really, just the way that they managed to stretch the defence in a way that made them look really tired, which they were, having, you know, chased Swanepoel's kicks, which are like 90 metres, so much harder chasing that than like a chip over the top, you know.
Also, like the sun in their eyes constantly as well.
Yeah,
which both Garbisi and Swanepoel ended up struggling with.
Yeah. It was a really good game. It was just a proper World Cup game. I loved it.
Me too. I had a great time. So, we should move on. Ireland versus Romania.
Yeah.
So, I watched the first half of this. I then had to go and get on the train to go and see Australia-Georgia at the Stade de France. And so, I listened to the second half on the radio. So, my takes on the second half will actually be those of Gareth Lewis and Tommy Bowe doing the radio commentary.
Okay.
Because you kind of can't formulate your own opinion listening to a game on the radio.
Yeah, especially a game like that. Also, I missed the first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then the last 20 minutes to go and meet you at Stade de France. But I turned on the telly and saw Romania were winning.
Yeah.
And I was gutted that I'd missed
Rapanu's try. Right. Romania can do nothing but concede in the rest of this tournament, which is kind of what they did in that game. But they had their moment.
Yeah.
They had the moment where they really contributed and gave this World Cup a moment to not forget.
Yeah.
They gave this World Cup the moment that will be on the Moments of Year video at the end as the real standout. Hinkley Vavasa's real breakaway for Rapanu to score.
He's a baller, man. He's so good.
Vavasa is one of those players. Vavasa will almost definitely Pro Day done next season.
Yeah, yeah. Is he not already?
No, he's in the Romanian League still.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is professional. Like, they have, you know, they have a mostly professional setup.
Yeah.
Semi-pro, but...
I'm hoping, because usually he plays either fullback or outside centre.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that when it comes to the game against Tonga, he does get moved out and we see him in a little bit more space.
Well, this was it. He played superbly. He played superbly in a kind of role you don't want your fly half doing, where he was the real threat.
Because he was, like, their most running metres, and he was playing 10.
But this is the other thing, right? Like, Romania have changed their halfback combination for something like 18 games in a row. Yesterday was their ninth halfback combination in 10 games.
Yeah.
Which is absurd. Like, and even then, those two that did stick together were different games.
Yeah, exactly. I do hope, because I think Tonga's their potentially winnable game in this pool.
I think it was pre-Andy Robinson.
Yeah.
If Andy Robinson was
it's
still there.
It's their most winnable game.
Yeah, I think Eugene Apshock, obviously an incredibly successful coach at club level.
It's
Jamie Lyle and Combs brought up the stat, which I hugely appreciate, that he's the most successful coach in the history of club rugby. However, they've just gone down. Like, the thing about that Andy Robinson Romania team is, like, they were so hard to beat.
Yeah.
Like, they were just no pushovers.
Yeah.
They were really fit. They were incredibly physical.
Their mauls and
they were very demanding, and their kicking tactics were very good.
Yeah.
And they weren't necessarily an expansive team, which is what Abstract's trying to make them more.
Yeah.
Abstract's clearly focused on them scoring more tries and building their attack a bit. We saw that a bit in the Rugby Championship. Mm. But they were suddenly letting in really soft tries, which they weren't with Robinson. And the thing is, this Tonga team are like, they're full of talented players, but they're not necessarily cohesive from everything we've seen so far.
No.
And there was a chance to upset them. Mm. And I think that's gone for a Mania in one decision. And we still don't know what the Andy Robinson case was all about.
Yeah.
We still don't know what that was.
To finish my point, that is the potentially winnable game
of that
pool for them. That's the one that they will be targeting. And I would I'd like to see them bring in Gabriel Pop at 10 for that. And Valvassa a bit wider. Because at that point, you can still have the attacking thing. But you've got a bit more of a backup plan, you know?
Yeah.
You've got two players who can kick the ball rather than just trying to send everything through Valvassa. And I think that now there'll be eyes on him, Valvassa. And I don't know. I feel like you want him in a slightly different role.
It's a long time since we had one of these real underdog teams have a breakout back
at
a World Cup. Like, normally the breakout player is a hooker or a back rower.
Yeah.
Sometimes a scrum half. Like, we saw a bit of Damien Stevens and Santiago
Arata,
Maybe a 10 at a push, but not really. You know,
like,
Tynes Kotso, we loved, but he wasn't a big breakout player. He was the Namibia fly-off in 2011. I realise we haven't said that. We assume that people have listened to
previous
seasons.
The fact to lose didn't sign Ramil Gaisin is disgraceful.
I know. But he is a real breakout back who will, you imagine, be playing at a higher level.
I hope so. He's bloody deserves it.
We should probably talk about Ireland.
Ireland were... The thing is, it doesn't even feel noteworthy to say Ireland are exceptional.
Yeah.
Because they always are.
Like, well, that first Gibson Park try was so easily crafted for them.
Yeah.
They just hit one good line and they were through.
Yeah.
And Romania put up a little bit of resistance in the first sort of 15 minutes.
Mm.
But from there on out, they just started falling off.
Yeah.
And by the time Sexton was just like running in, you know, his first try at the end of the first half and then picking up a second in the second half, which I assume was great. Obviously took him to be Ireland's all-time top Rugby World Cup try scorer, overtook Ronan O'Gara. Tommy Bowe was very in on the radio comms about how much that would mean to Sexton, how competitive it would be, and how much he desperately wouldn't want O'Gara to be the top point scorer.
I mean, fair enough. Hey, L'opportunity was fucking enormous for Sexton.
And he took it.
Yeah.
He was a captain of my fantasy team and did very well for me.
Alright.
So I had
Capozzo as captain of mine.
Yeah.
Who netted me more points than I realised, because say you only touched the ball like four times in the game.
But a lot of running metres and a try in that one thing.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
But Peter Omani, exceptional as always.
Like, fantastic.
Everywhere. Scored a try. Clearly didn't want to score a try.
Yeah.
That's too flashy for Peter Omani. But like, breakdown, just carrying the ball around the park. He's just incredible.
Joe McCarthy has really settled in Test rugby.
Yes, he's a serious contender for the Ireland, like starting 23 now.
I think he should be. He should be. And obviously it's Romania, and he's played a couple of warm-up games in the lead-in. But
he's
through.
The real deal, man.
It's like, the thing, I believe it was Leo Cullen said, that we're not gifted with this, like people built like this very often.
Yeah.
You know, like he's a very particular bold of second row. Yeah.
And that Romanian mall did look remotely threatening to Ireland, thanks to Joe McCarthy.
Which is their real strength.
A little bit, but.
And it's the one thing that has continued, is they've got the best mall in Tier 2 rugby, and it wasn't a threat. They got close a couple of times, but couldn't really take it. Yeah, Joe McCarthy, fantastic. Could be, finally a player to challenge Adam Beard in the Irish team, because they haven't got another second row. James Ryan's obviously still great. Tadhg Byrne, I thought, had a good game at six.
Yeah.
Took his try really well.
Yeah.
And Bundy Arki, I think the period...
Oh, he was brilliant. He was so good.
Yeah. The period of Romanian resistance was very much ended by them having to tackle Bundy Arki.
Yeah.
And just going, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Like, we've been tackling the rest of these pricks. I'm not tackling the massive Samoan lad.
Yeah. It never does you any harm having a player like him in your midfield, does it?
Not
he was
at all.
Fantastic. It's just, that man doesn't get any slower.
No. No. Brex took someone on the outside in the Italy game.
I'm uncomfortable with that. Let's not
talk
about it.
What was that all about? Yeah, I kind of don't have much to say about Ireland. Like, they're very good in a not particularly exciting way. It's exciting to watch, then it's not like exciting to talk about.
It's not exciting to talk about when it's against Romania.
Yeah.
And they just... They repetitively, like, bullied them, you know?
The thing is, right, this
and
is how I always felt about the All Blacks. Right, it's like, you're like, oh, they scored a brilliant try. Well done.
Yeah, you know? You do that every week.
Yeah. Where, like, when Scotland score these brilliant tries and tear someone up, you're like, oh, that was fun, I enjoy that. When Italy do it, it's fun.
Ireland were brilliant, but as I say, it's not noteworthy.
No,
they were
they're the number one team in the world. And
they
tore apart a team who are on the decline.
Yeah, and didn't play that well.
No.
Beyond the 10th minute.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So, I guess we should move on, if that's all right with you.
Yes.
To Australasia v. Georgia.
Brilliant stuff. So Australasia played against Georgia. Australia against Georgia. We were there.
We were there.
We went to the Stade de France.
Now, here's the other thing, right? Didn't have a very good seat for this. You had a slightly better seat.
Yeah, so we sat separately, weirdly.
Yeah, we bought the tickets together, but hey, we ended up sat a couple of rows
Hopefully
apart.
That doesn't happen much else.
Yeah, I hope not.
Hope not.
I need to check.
Yeah. Anyway, I was sat... Well, we were both sat, like, behind the posts on what was Australia's trial in the first half, so we didn't see a lot of action.
Yeah, I was sat in the corner behind the posts, so I was basically obviously very little.
Yeah.
But I think you can still get an impression. And there was some stuff I did very much see.
Yes. I mean, the people around me were a lot more interested in the Mexican waves than the rugby.
That was... Okay, so... Look, I've never been a massive fan. I hate Mexican waves.
Yeah, they're a bit shit, aren't
they? I missed two of the tries because there were Mexican waves going on in front of
me. Yeah, and like, obviously the action's at the other end. I get it, you know.
Yeah.
But just like, if you can't see it, look at the big screen.
Yeah.
Like, it's very easy to see the big screens at Stade de France.
Yeah.
Wherever you're sat.
It just like, I don't know, like, for everything we're saying about the France really buying into the World Cup, it felt a bit like they weren't very interested in that game. Like,
yeah.
That felt a bit like
very Judgment. Very different atmosphere to Friday night, wasn't it?
It was. I went to Judgment Day this year,
yeah,
and nobody was interested in watching the rugby. It was like a piss up.
Yeah.
And like, everyone was going back and forth to the bar constantly, and it was kind of a shit occasion, to be honest.
Yeah.
This wasn't that, but it felt a lot like, you know, like there weren't people getting up and down constantly.
Mm.
But it did feel a little bit like the crowd was more interested in having a few beers
in
the sun,
yeah,
you know, than the rugby, and that's fine.
And that's a great part of it.
The thing is, like, you know, if you're going to buy your ticket, fair enough.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you paid your money, you do what you want.
Yeah, I just don't like Mexican waves, I've decided.
Yeah,
I'm just like, if there's a stoppage, fine. If play's going on, stop, quell it.
We'll talk about the Wallabies, but first, let's talk about Georgia. What do we make of Georgia?
Georgia were cruelly, cruelly denied by the following game the award of biggest possible implosion by a team this weekend.
Yeah.
Georgia were just constantly shooting themselves in the foot, man. Like, that Georgia team was good enough to have won that game.
Mm.
And I think the thing is, them winning that game is them fixing, like, three or four persistent errors they're making over and over again.
Yeah.
And it's like, if that game was a World Cup warm-up, you'd be going, oh, brilliant, they know what they've got to fix and they can work on that for next week. Or for, you know, 3 weeks' time when the World Cup begins.
Yeah.
That being the first game of the World Cup is concerning because they now play, is it Portugal up next and Fiji? Or the other way around?
I don't know.
But anyway, and then building into Wales last. I think they can have it fixed by Wales in the last game.
Yeah.
In a similar way to Italy in last year's Six Nations, that I got feeling. But it just kind of feels like there's lots of tiny little problems with them that they keep making the same errors over and over again. It's really frustrating to watch them.
Yeah.
Because they're a good enough team to be much better than this.
We had a chat at halftime in that game and we were saying, like, we don't know what Georgia are at the moment, you know? Like, they've not really felt that in the game. And I said to you, I think Vassal Lobsonides is having quite a good game. And then you kind of went, do you? Because he's put a kick out on the floor, he's given a penalty away.
He gave away three penalties in the space of, like, 5 minutes.
And, like, I think you simultaneously agreed and disagreed with me on that. Because, like, he kicked really well. He got that charge down that won the opening penalty. Like, he joined up on a line break and threw, like, a load of really good passes. And yet, it's so hard to quantify where Georgia are at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. I thought Macker at 10 was very good.
Yeah.
I thought that was like a really impressive kind of breakthrough performance. Obviously, he's won caps in the past.
Yeah.
But nothing on this scale. And considering the way Abdon Dadze was their most vital player at the last World Cup, and he was a 20-year-old flat
half. I'd imagine he's still going to be second choice to Abzindadze.
I agree, but it feels like they've got another option now, yeah, which hasn't been the case.
For sure, for sure.
When you had Kamaladze coming back in, you know, who was obviously, who at that point was like 68.
Yeah.
It's a great thing for them to have an alternate. Yeah. He played well. Real great sidestep on him as well, which I didn't, yeah, didn't anticipate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, good in the backfield as well. Yeah. He's very, very handy. I think even Ashvili on the flank, we both look at,
yes,
this.
Very impressive.
Excellent. Took his try really, really well on the wing.
I think he was a stand-up player for Georgia for me.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with you on that.
But I think there's a few things. Like, Niniashvili has a little bit of early Stuart Hogg syndrome.
Mm.
Where he's starting to take on a bit too much and be like, I am our good player, I am our class fun,
sure,
player. At the expense of things going well. That Donaldson try from the intercept.
Yes.
He starts it with a brilliant step and he breaks out his own 22, showing his pace, showing all the things that's taken him to the position he's in with Lyon, with, you know, being one of the real star players in world rugby of the kind of under-21-ish generation. And yet, he then throws this ridiculous, stupid offload.
To Taniela Tupou as well.
Yeah.
I was thinking this on Friday night, but this is not the World Cup of the random hanging offload. Please, no, let's not make it as such, you know?
But I think because they work for Fiji in the,
yeah,
sevens,
yeah,
people are like, oh, let's just keep doing them. And they, like, look nice.
I think
DuPont does them. No, that's it, though,
France
isn't it?
France did,
like,
loads.
It's France loving them. It's France loving it for the submerger thing, where they just hang it in the air,
yeah,
and just expect them forward to steam onto the ball.
Yeah.
Or DuPont to take it and then just do,
yeah,
the score.
Or just Penno to just appear out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, it sometimes happens. And we've shared our frustrations about Tabutsadze.
Yeah.
Just, like, he's an exceptionally talented player. But if you think that with Marika Korombete in front of you, who has a head start, you're going to beat him in a chip and chase battle, then you've,
this
got
is
something
the
else coming.
Right, Tabutsadze makes that break at the end of the first half. And I had a moment, like, and there's an interesting excitement at the underdog making a break.
Mm.
And I had a moment where going, oh, he's going to chip and chase this and fail badly. Because that's all he does.
Yeah.
Like, he's a cracking player in the waiting who just keeps making the same handful of decisions. As I was saying about George in general, he's maybe a good microcosm of them. Mm. In that he does the same things over and over again and they never seem to work at test level.
Yeah.
He goes with these chip and chases constantly. And yeah, he might score a few tries against Poland or Spain doing that. But against Australia, when he's played against Scotland, when he's played against Wales, it hasn't worked
so,
consistently.
Yeah, which of Korombete and Nwanga Nisiwase do you think you're going to beat to that,
yeah,
point, mate?
And his timing on the kicks is, like, it's not like Penno the other week, where he times, yeah, it perfectly for Nwanga Nisiwase planting his feet.
Yeah.
Here, he just, like, gives Korombete a chance to turn and beat him to it.
Yeah.
He's nowhere near. It's just, like,
it's really frustrating to watch, because,
yeah,
he's such a good player.
If he was a player who'd been taken in as a 21-year-old at a big club,
yeah,
I think he could have been a really fantastic player.
100%.
But I think it's kind of come too late for him.
Yeah.
And obviously, he's George's all-time top try scorer. Like, he's, you know,
oh, yeah,
he's doing a lot right.
Amount.
The frustration I have isn't with him being shit. It's with him being, like,
it's with him not being world-class.
He's a 7 out of 10 player.
He should be a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, he has the potential to be a 9.
Yeah.
And he's not.
But anyway,
and it's just, like, it's a real frustration for me.
Excellent player, should be world-class.
Yeah.
Right, Australia.
Australia,
they were
so
fantastic.
My take,
yeah,
out of nowhere, Ben Donaldson has become the Wallabies most important player.
Right.
And I didn't see that one coming at,
yeah,
all at the start
so,
of the day.
So, goal kicking is one aspect of it. And also, just, like, for a guy whose fullback's not his first position, per se, but...
Sorry, I recognise them because they pop up next to Andy Farrell. The Irish analyst team just walked by.
Oh, wow.
And they all have, like, Irish youth brand of stash. And there's one of them that's always next to Andy Farrell on all of the clips. So there you go. So...
But, yeah. Carry on.
Yeah, carry on. No, we can leave that in. Yeah.
Okay. But, like, his management at the backfield was just completely flawless.
Yeah.
Against, like, again, like, George's halfbacks weren't kicking badly remotely.
He
was just so, so solid back there, and his kicking game was fantastic.
Slotted in, took a lot of pressure off Carter Gordon.
Yeah.
Who had a good game generally.
Yes,
and
he was very good, I thought.
The thing we've seen about Carter Gordon is when he's made mistakes, he's tended to double down and make another one shortly afterwards.
Yeah.
He kind of loses his head a bit.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, he's a 20-year-old fly-off who hasn't played much pro rugby.
Yeah, he's a young kid.
Fine, yeah. But what we really saw yesterday was Donaldson able to come in, take a bit of pressure on him, act as a second first receiver, and also, most importantly, take the goal kicking off him.
Yeah.
Because Carter Gordon's not an experienced goal kicker.
He can't
there
kick
was,
goals.
I believe it was the Raw, could have been Green and Gold Rugby, brought up the stat that he's only kicked one penalty goal in his professional career.
Which is insane.
At Super Rugby level or above. He kicked
he's
one penalty against the All Blacks.
International fight-off.
Yeah, and he's kicked a handful of conversions at both Super Rugby and international level. He's kicked one penalty for the Wallabies and none at Super Rugby level.
Yeah.
Which kind of says everything about where he's at.
It's a red flag.
Yeah. He's missed more than he's kicked.
You would need Nick White in the side to kick the goals if,
yeah,
you didn't have Ben Donaldson, you know?
And even then, he's never been a frontline kicker, Nick White. He's
no.
been a, give me a long range effort in the last minute to win it because I'm a shit
out. Yeah, if you've got a man in the bin, then he's, yeah, you know, but the perfect thing is, placement.
But little piss boy just loves winding people up. Little piss boy going to piss.
And oh, yeah, he very much did the same yesterday.
The thing is, I don't believe Nick White is a goal kicker. I think he just takes it up in order to be annoying in the last minute. Like,
because you want him to miss it.
Yeah, if he thinks it will wind up the opposition, he'll suddenly become a world-class goal kicker.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
If he thought it would be annoying, he could become a scrummager out of nowhere, I reckon.
That's
He's just like
fair.
The pissiest little piss boy.
Yeah. But Australia, I felt, didn't show anything at their hand. I think they
very little.
Basically one-out rugby. Like, the rugby they played was extremely, you know, straightforward, and they got the job done.
It was the World Cup warm-up game they needed.
Yeah, yeah.
And they played it in the first game of the World Cup, it came with a bonus point.
All of the penalties that came their way just went for goal for them. They scored the four tries and then got out of town.
Yeah.
You know, they did exactly the minimum of what was required of them, and that's clearly what Eddie Jones wanted out of that game.
Yeah, yeah, no. I think it was only positive for Australia.
Yeah.
They learnt to win.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is a young team who hadn't won a game before together.
And they've broken the duck.
Yeah. And now they only have bigger and bigger tests.
Yeah.
And you build momentum off games like that. You know, like, I point this a lot, but, like, Wales going on that run that took them to the World Cup semi-final and a Grand Slam started with them beating a second-choice Argentinian team.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, they beat them, they built momentum, and it just kept building and building and building, because you take confidence and you build from confidence and you learn to win games, and that's the most crucial skill in rugby, and it's vastly underrated. A lot of it is that belief and believing in your kicking game in particular, and in your, you know, discipline and just being able to, you know,
Australia stick nailed those areas for sure.
Australia got all the things they needed to prove, right?
Yeah.
And yes, you can go, yes, it's a, you know, struggling Georgia team, whatever. But it's a bloody good Georgia team who beat two Tier 1 nations last year.
Absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
It's largely the team that won those games. And I think it was a critical game for Australia to have won. I think that boosted their chances enormously. And it's made that pool even more interesting.
Yeah.
Even if, from a Georgian perspective, it was a bit concerning.
Yeah. Shall we look at the final game of yesterday, then?
Yeah, okay. Angleterre v. Argentina.
Yes. Yes. So this game was, I think it was objectively an outstanding game of rugby, because it went not in the way anyone expected it to. It was a complete demolition by the team that everyone thought would get battered, especially 3 minutes in when they received a red card, and then like 6 minutes in when they Argentina were 3-0 up, Buffelli had another shot at goal, and we were like rubbing our hands going like, oh mate, this is going to be a Buffelli masterclass. Argentina are going to batter them. This is the end of the story.
Enter George Fort.
Enter
and
George
frankly,
Fort.
Exit Buffelli and the rest of the Argentina team.
Yeah, we didn't see much of Buffelli.
Exit the brains of Argentine rugby.
I think we need to talk about England first before we talk about Argentina in the context
absolutely,
of this.
Absolutely.
England were outstanding. I think that they weathered that Argentina storm for the first sort of 20 minutes enough that they kept the score to 3 points, you know? And I think that was the minimum thing that they needed to do. Courtney Laws was outstanding.
Yeah.
You know, making big hits, being a real pain at the breakdown.
Yeah.
Getting crucial turnovers. Proper, like, captain's performance.
The Courtney Laws of about 3 or 4 years ago. And I think the last few years, he's been... It's not he's playing off reputation or anything. He hasn't become a worse player. But there's a bit of him that looks tired sometimes. There's a bit of him that hasn't quite been as impactful. And also, he's marked heavier.
Yeah.
Whereas he was just like that tenacious, ferocious, like unstoppable,
he was everywhere.
Enormous machine.
Yeah.
That just like, whether you're an Argentine player clearing out, whether you're an Argentine player carrying the ball, or whether you're a non-nuclear family that just wants to get on with their lives, you know you're in danger when Courtney Laws is around.
Sure, sure. Yeah, he was unbelievable. And that first sort of, 20, 25 minutes, that was what they needed. They needed to just weather Argentina's storm until they had a slither of momentum, I should say, and that was all they got.
Yeah,
and that was all they needed.
Well, this was the thing, right? So I think there's a few ways to look at what happened, but the main way is that was an absolute masterclass by George Ford. That was the best performance by any individual player in the tournament so far.
Yeah,
and it's going to take some going to beat in the pool stage.
Yeah,
he single-handedly, with that first drop goal, reinvigorated basically his entire pack. Like, Laws was already playing all right, and then he suddenly went up like six levels. I thought Benno was absolutely fantastic.
He was outstanding.
He put in two kicks, which were both bad options, but if you put those aside...
Yeah, neither of those were
other
great.
Than that...
But, like, carrying the ball at eight, he felt like...
And just his impact at the breakdown.
Yeah, breakdown, he was everywhere. Defensively, like, he worked so hard. He's unbelievably fast, like getting across the field.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was phenomenal. But yeah, the thing is, a lot of people are weighing up: did England play really well, or did Argentina play badly? And I think Argentina played badly because England made them play badly.
Exactly. Exactly.
They rattled them. As soon as that George Ford drop goal went over, we saw nothing of Argentina for the whole rest of the game. And that's, what, 50-odd minutes we're talking there?
Yeah.
I can't believe I'm saying this. Julio Montoya lost his head after that, which, don't get me wrong, he's a fiery character, but usually he just about bubbles under the line, you know, rather than crossing it. Like, we didn't see Matera at his best. Gonzalez got subbed off quite early on.
There's not, from about the half-hour mark onwards, an Argentine player in the entire 23, I would broadly speaking say played well.
No.
All of them, I thought, were pretty
was
terrible.
Quiet, you know?
Yeah, they were quiet or actively bad across the board.
It's really disappointing, but it's not disappointing necessarily in Argentina because, again, England enabled this.
Yeah.
They were absolutely world-class. England have been a shit show all year, and they have found a tactic in having George Ford able to drop goals from 50 yards now. In having that, it doesn't matter how they're playing.
Yeah.
As long as they can get into these positions and they know how to engineer this well and stick to this game plan, they can score enough points. Drop goals are so overpowered and so underused.
The thing is, they did exactly the thing that Steve Borthwick's Leicester team were doing.
Yeah.
Which is the thing they weren't doing in the Six Nations, where they were playing a bit like somewhere in between the Eddie Jones England, which were very attack-oriented, but with a very strong kicking and defence game.
Yeah.
And, Eddie Jones England was becoming. And Borthwick Leicester, which was very conservative, and I just lent into that, like, we're going to be incredibly passionate, incredibly fiery, and it's just going to be like a masterclass of scrum and maul and just 3 points all the way. Right, England didn't look like scoring a try all game.
No,
that isn't a problem.
Not a bad
people
thing.
Are saying England are shit because of that. They're not. They're really good.
Because they found a way around that.
Exactly. The thing about rugby is there's so many ways to win it, and if you're to say, oh, every team has to be playing running rugby, you're fundamentally missing the point of the game. The game doesn't work like that.
I'm just going to quickly...
And it can't work like that. And if it did work like that, then it would be boring in itself.
That's it. I'm going to quickly quote / shout out to The Loose Head on Twitter, who posted a really good bit of analysis on Friday, where he said, the thing that I think is going to make the difference in this Rugby World Cup is the teams who score more points than the opposition in the 80 minutes is going to be the one that wins the game most often. And I wholeheartedly agree with that. And I think England were solid gold proof of that. They didn't score a try, but they bloody scored points. And the thing is, obviously he was taking the piss when he said that.
Yeah.
But that is solid gold proof. That is all that matters.
Yeah.
You do not need to score. If anyone calls England boring for playing like that, then you're fundamentally missing the point. Because that game, they were outstanding.
Yeah.
And we both loved that in a really, like, depressing way.
I would have loved it if it was the way around.
Yeah, that's it. But, like, I loved the style of play. I hated that it was England doing it and winning.
Yeah. But it's just, like... It was a trap that England kept setting over and over again in the way they kicked, the positions they put Argentina into. And Argentina fell hook, line and sinker.
Oh, my God. Argentina just refusing to kick the ball and just going, oh, yeah, they're putting us in our 22. We're fine with that.
We'll just run it back.
Let's just stay here.
The amount of times they went back with successive phases and just kept trying to attack when the defence was so on top of them. When you had Earl and Laws in that kind of, like, fired up, like, really aggressive motion... England were down to 14.
Yeah.
Right?
You wouldn't be able to tell. Yeah. Like, you said this at the time, but, like, so many of Argentina's problems could be solved if they just had a normal fly half.
Yeah.
And at Carreras has had many bad games at 10. He's been kind of getting away with it, but he's not had many bad games at 10 for Argentina.
Even if they could bring Nico Sanchez, who's obviously passed his best on.
Yeah.
But as a fly half, he's played that as his position his entire life. He's not played anywhere else. He knows it and he knows how to put shape on a game. He didn't do that, and instead Argentina left in this position where they're just constant bollocks.
Yeah.
Like, it was just this, like, awful attack of them imploding, and everything became a mistake.
Oh, should we just give away a penalty?
More and more frustrated. And the
Shut
thing
up.
Is, like, rugby is this fundamentally emotional game.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, teams can go with all the detail, all the analysis in the world, and I think a lot of analysis always misses this, that actually, if a team loses by 30, it's normally because they emotionally lost it, you know? It's the thing you see a lot with, like, Warren Gatland teams is a great example, but Steve Borthwick's teams are probably the same, where the moment you're behind, the moment you're 3 scores behind, it becomes so much harder to motivate yourself through those kind of very kick chase, very, like, aggressive tactics.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, this isn't working, or we're fed up, you know, whatever. And it suddenly changes completely, and suddenly you become really soft and easy to spread down. Because defence is so emotive in rugby, like it has to be, because of the way you're defending. It's not like a technical thing like in football or basketball or other sports. Like, you are literally flying up and throwing yourself at people in order to try and stop them by any means you have possible to you.
Yeah.
Besides, like, biting. except for Lavanini, who was playing, but bizarrely wasn't one of the players who got sent off.
I think he was the only player who didn't give away more than one penalty. He did give away one in the lineup, yeah. But still.
But, yeah, I just thought England were fantastic. I thought the way they limited and broke Argentina down, Argentina began frustrated, they started giving more and more penalties, England started taking the free
England
points
England have
from
changed
them.
That entire pool, yeah. The whole perception of it.
They've changed the whole World Cup.
Yeah,
I think there's a very decent chance England make the final.
It's entirely possible.
Which would be bullshit.
Of course it would. But it'd be legitimate as well.
Yeah, exactly. The thing is, I think there's a very good chance Wales play that way as well. And we end up
God,
with
I hope so.
Yeah. Look, there's a chance in which the semi-finals...
That would be bullshit, because they're both rubbish.
The thing is, though, right, I think there's a not unrealistic world in which the semi-finals are two teams in two of France, New Zealand, Ireland, who are incredibly attacking-oriented,
yeah.
And incredibly dynamic, and England and Wales, who are so negative and kick everything.
That would be hilarious.
And it would be very, very fun to see that clash in styles, because there's a chance, right? We could end up with an England-Wales final, which would be the worst thing in the world. I don't think that can
That's
work,
the most
actually,
bonkers thing you've ever
yeah.
said. But
like, it wins games. Argentina are a better team than England, and yet on the night, they were... And obviously, they scored that try at the end to deny the statistic being lost that I mentioned on Twitter. But every game since 1999 that hasn't had a try scored has finished 15-6 in the Rugby World Cup.
Which is mental.
Yeah, 24 years now. Which is a hell of a thing. But I just think, like, I'm getting very carried away there, but it's a style of rugby that wins games. Argentina yeah. are a better team than England, and yet England demolished them to the point that they were, with a few minutes ago, they were 24 points ahead,
so
which
my,
is mad.
My 3 points on that game: kicking rugby's great.
Yeah.
Drop goals are fun. Yeah. George Ford, good.
George Ford, extremely, extremely good.
Trey bomb.
So,
should we go watch Chile?
Bomb. We should do that. We should go watch Chile versus Japan. Thank you very much. We'll hopefully pick up another one of these tomorrow with the games from Sunday, which will probably feature lots of Welsh-flavoured tears.
Yes. We'll see you then.
C'est bon.
C'est bon.